Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Molly.
And I'm Kristen.
Kristen, our show is called Stuff Mom Never Told You.
Yes, it is.
But today I'm going to talk about something my mom always told me.
Oh, okay.
She always told me this every time I had to wear pantyhose or tights for like church or special occasions and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like pantyhose and tights.
Okay.
I hate them. And the reason I hate them is because I don't like how it feels, like when you walk and you can hear them like rubbing together.
Like, whoosh, whoosh.
Yeah, I just hate how that feels. I hate how it sounds. I hate everything about it. So when I was a small child, I would compensate for that by starting to walk wider and wider.
Kind of like you were saddle sore?
Yeah, almost like I was sort of like evolving into a duck or some other creature. And so whenever my mom saw this start to happen, she would be like, Molly, stop walking like you've got a corn cob up your bottom. And so now, once I figured out how a corn cob would get up my bottom, then I was really freaked out and didn't want to wear tights or hose. And even now, like when I have to wear them, which is rarely, rarely, let me tell you, Kristen, I still think, man, I am really walking like there's a corn cob up my bottom.
You have some deep-seated psychological traumas attached to nylons.
I really do. I really hate them. And so I was determined to find out where they came from, which is the topic of today's podcast.
Where they came from so that you can destroy it?
So that I can constantly vilify the man who came up with them. And yes, ladies, it was a man.
It was a man. But you know, for the record, I'll say I'm not anti-tights. Anti-pantyhose are a different matter. There's something different about pantyhose. But I don't mind tights. As a former ballerina, I'm quite accustomed to the feeling of tights on my legs. That sounds weird to say like that. And the man, Molly, I believe you are referring to is Alan Gant.
Yes. And, you know, we try not to male bash. And I said, oh, he's invented by a man real condescendingly. But the fact is he invented them for his poor pregnant wife.
Yeah, Alan Gant was trying to be nice. Basically, he and his wife were on a trip. I believe they were going to New York City.
From North Carolina,
going to the Big Apple. And his wife, Ethel Boone Gant, was very, very pregnant. And of course, a fine lady like Ethel Boone Gant would not be seen in the big city without her nylons on. But back then, since we didn't have, you know, pantyhose that just you can pull up that are all in one piece, you had your nylons and then your garter belt, I think, mm-hmm. and that hooked on. And imagine, I mean,
or a girdle.
Or a girdle. Yeah. And imagine all of that, on top of a very pregnant belly that would not have been very comfortable.
Right. So she was basically like, I can't be seen in public anymore until after this child is born because I cannot comfortably walk around with all these things on.
Yeah. And so, and this was in 1953, and Alan Gant Sr. was then running a textile company called Glen Raven Mills. And he thought, well, what if I took a pair of panties and fasten stockings to it. And so Ethel thought that was a great idea. So she kind of made a test model of them. And then she gave the test model to Alan and he took it back to his textile company. And Alan got together with some of his buds at the textile mill and they developed what they later called panty legs.
Right. And you know, from step one, I can tell it's a bad idea to put the word panty in the title. Maybe that's the one reason I don't like them. Well, not the one reason, but one of the reasons.
Anti-panty, anti-hose,
so many
Molly.
People hate the word panty. I know I'm not alone in that.
Well, we'll get to some other clever titles for pantyhose. But they hit the shelves in 1959, but they really didn't become really popular until the mid 60s because women were still wearing the girdles and garter belts and, all of that. And it was with the rise of hemlines and the introduction of the mini skirt and fashion icons such as Twiggy, who really brought pantyhose and tights into the mainstream.
Right, because they wanted to wear skirts that were shorter than their garters.
Mm-hmm.
So when hemlines rose, so too did sales of the pantyhose. And then that's when they got all crazy with, like, cool designs mm-hmm. and cool, like, colors.
Psychedelic patterns.
Spandex came into being.
Mm-hmm.
And then when women started really going into the workplace in the 70s and the 80s, that was just what you wore to work. Like, you know, my mom is appalled that I can just wear jeans and khakis and whatever I want, really, to come in here and podcast while she, when she worked at a bank, would wear pantyhose.
But there came a shift around the end of the 90s when women got really tired of being confined in these pantyhose. And the Hosiery Association president, Sally Kay, attributes this to a more relaxed work environment. Basically, like you said, Molly, we can come in. Right now, you and I are wearing jeans.
I'm wearing a t-shirt.
T-shirts, casual shoes, no pantyhose, no leg exposure or business suits. So there's this more relaxed atmosphere in the office. So why should we put on uncomfortable pantyhose to come into work?
That's true. And, you know, I have to say, I was telling Kristen this earlier, if I had to work at a job where I had to wear pantyhose every day, because I know that there are still some conservative work environments where that is still the
sure.
norm, where you do wear a skirt, the hose, closed toe heels, all that. I don't think I would want to work there if I had to keep that up.
But Molly, I must say, for my own fashion preferences, winter is coming. And I like tights. Not necessarily pantyhose. There's a difference. Yeah, but tights are kind of comfy.
I prefer leggings.
But even though pantyhose have dipped down in sales since the 90s, in 2008, there were still 1.4 billion pairs of pantyhose sold.
Yeah.
So they're not going anywhere.
Probably not. And you know, all of that number, as well as the story of Alan Gant, came from Joseph Caputo at Smithsonian. But when we were researching this, we also found a kind of neat article from USA Today. And we talked about relaxed office dress. This article went over sort of why the pantyhose sales have gone down in mm-hmm. addition to the workplace thing. I liked this theory, which I'd never heard before. They said pantyhose sales have gone down because of the Sex and the City effect.
Yeah.
How many problems or glories in women's lives can they blame on Sex and the City?
I would like to say that I think the media overestimates how much women base their lives around Carrie Bradshaw and her gaggle of gals.
But how many times have we podcasted about her, Kristen?
She comes up a lot.
She does come up. So maybe she's coming up yet again because, as USA Today points out, you never saw a hose on Carrie Bradshaw.
But even though, okay, so maybe they're calling this a Sex and the City effect, but at the same time, like, the characters in Sex and the City are just styled to be extremely fashionable, so they're just reflecting the fashion trends of the time anyway.
That's true. But they were saying that because they all wore strappy sandals and short skirts with no hose, that sort of set a standard, as did just, you know, how I don't know if I buy this one either, but basically they're saying that because now we have a lot of spray tans and self-tanning creams, that we wouldn't need that sheen that, like, nude pantyhose can add to your legs.
For me, whenever I wear those, like two nude pantyhose, so I feel like I have mannequin legs. You know, maybe that's just me. Yeah, right, listeners, write in and let me know what you think on that. But there are also some things that hose companies have been doing to try to revamp their sales, in addition to making things like more leggings and fishnets that would be appropriate for the workplace, and stirrup tights, footless tights. But they also had they're also body shapers, for instance, Spanx, which is a neighbor. Their headquarters, I think, is right down the street from us, is really big right now because it's these body shapers, basically like super duper control top mm-hmm. pantyhose, and other mainstream pantyhose lines are coming out with body shapers as well.
Mm-hmm. And you know, niche market, which I was not aware of till I started researching this, Kristen, is men.
Yeah, I liked this.
We found an article in the Wall Street Journal called King Size, Not Queen, Some Men Have Taken to Wearing Pantyhose. And, you know, they acknowledged that some men in the past who needed pantyhose might have been cross-dressing. Mm-hmm. But now, they saw men in stores and just assumed they were buying pantyhose for a wife or a girlfriend. But apparently men have caught on that these are really good to keep your legs warm. Mm-hmm. To keep, you know, your circulation. You know, some people, instead of wearing the support hose that you get recommended, are wearing pantyhose instead. And they say it's not that far a jump from, like, bicycle leggings yeah. or running shorts.
To tight thermals.
To wearing some tight thermals.
Yeah, according to this article, which came out, this was in 2002, so it is a little dated. But nevertheless, it says at shapings.com, which is a lingerie website offering European brands, about 85% of women's hosiery sales go to men, many of whom, and I like to say, place two orders, a big one for themselves and a little one for the lady at home.
But there is, you know, kind of a problem about how you market this very distinctly lady product mm-hmm. to a male. There's this line called Active Skin. It used to be called Confalon. And their tagline was, Confalons are not your mother's pantyhose.
So it was basically like, guys, it's okay. We know you want to wear these comfortable, warm, supportive hose.
Yeah. And in this article, they interviewed a guy who worked with shapings.com, which apparently sells a lot to men. And he suggested that they rename the men's power skin.
Power skin. You know what? Now that winter is rolling around, and now that I know that some men are secret pantyhose wearers, I'm now going to be looking to see if I can catch a snip of hose poking through any
yeah, I mean, they say, you know, if you're wearing long pants, no one can necessarily know, but there were some guys in this article who wear them under shorts.
Yeah.
So, but you know,
it works.
Men were the first people to wear hose. You know, yes. Pantyhose as we know them with the nylons, have existed since Alan Gant invented them, but hose, sort of the rudimentary versions, have been around since forever, right?
Yeah, because hose are basically, the evolved product of socks, because in medieval times, the noble classes started to wear socks, if only to make their shoes less uncomfortable, because obviously they didn't have super comfortable shoes back then. And so if you had a little more money to spend, you could wear some socks that would be woven by hand to fit your feet, because they didn't have all of the nice stretchy materials that we have now. And so they would put them on to protect their feet.
So practical, yes. Earlier generations.
Those medieval nobles.
And they're big in the Renaissance for men. But I think that things really took off in 1937. That, I guess, is really the direct predecessor of what Alan Gant came up with. 1937 was when nylon was invented, this revolutionary new yarn. And they had this big display of nylons at the 1939 New York World's Fair, and it was just the biggest deal in the world. Women bought over 4 million pairs when they first went into stores. During World War II, soldiers learned that if you wanted to trade something to a lady, offering her some nylons was mm-hmm. a good way to get what you wanted. And teenage girls, during shortages of nylons during the war, would just paint, like, the seam onto their legs so that they looked like they were in style. But that would all lead up to the girdle or the garter belt, which I always thought would be better for me because, you know, I don't like how the thighs feel when they rub together.
Yeah.
Corncob up the butt. So maybe I should have just investigated garters more.
I think that you should just bring back the garter belt.
I guess.
I mean, Mad Men's really in style. I bet those ladies are wearing garters.
That's true. I do love that show.
There you go.
We do have, just to finish things up, some cool fun facts about how pantyhose are made.
Yeah, it takes about 10 minutes for a single hose to be knitted, and the legs are actually knitted separately, as you would imagine, and then they are joined together in unison to make the final product. But when they're first knit, they are approximately 6 feet long, depending on the style and type of yarn, and then they go through a pressurized seaming oven that basically shrinks them down to the little hose we have from the store.
But depending on, like, what company's making them, they might do something where they kind of shape it to the leg. You know, mm-hmm. Depending on how much money you want to spend, you can buy them so they're, you know, pre-shaped.
And the ones that have, like, lace on them and things like that cost more, not so much because the lace is expensive, but it's because they have to create that stuff out of house.
And they do it by hand.
Yeah, and they do it by hand. So that ups the cost. And with all of this, this technology that's gone into making these hose, socks, hose, everything for hundreds of years now, we're now to the point, Molly, and this is from that USA Today article that you pulled out, that, we have hose that might actually be good for us. For instance, Hanes has a line called Silk Reflections that's designed to improve your circulation and is infused with vitamin E to soften the skin. High-tech hose.
High-tech hose, but never forget that they can also give you yeast infections. So wear some with the cotton crotch.
Wonderful advice to end that on, Molly. And if you have any thoughts on pantyhose,
if you're like me, if you're anti-pantyhose with till your dying breath, I want to hear from you.
Or if you're like me and, you know, you don't mind tights all that much.
So we're going to hear from you guys about your thoughts on pantyhose. In the meantime, let's do some quick listener mails from people who wrote in on our other podcasts. So our first email is from Tiffany, and she is writing on the Co-Sleeping podcast. She wrote, I think parents who choose this route are often looked at as crazy hippies, but it really saved my sanity in the first few weeks after my daughter was born. She wanted to breastfeed almost every hour, and I would have been exhausted if I had to get up and feed her. One product that helped that you didn't mention is a co-sleeper bassinet that you lay right on the bed. It has metal sides that prevent you from rolling onto it, but otherwise it lays flat on the bed. I also wanted to comment that as a new mother, I was petrified of something happening to my daughter, and for the first few weeks, I woke at every little squeak and grunt she made. It was nice to have her right next to me so I could reassure myself that she was still breathing. After a month, she went into the pack and play and then on into the crib. Now, except for the occasional nightmare-induced sleepover, she does just fine on her own. So you can practice a little attachment parenting and not be stuck with a clingy child for life. Thank you, Tiffany.
All right, I've got another one on co-sleeping from Katie, and she says that the age of the child is also an important factor in co-sleeping. I was too scared of suffocating my baby to ever be an active co-sleeper, but I did occasionally co-sleep with my baby when she was particularly fussy or sick. This happened the most when she was a newborn and happened less and less as she has gotten older. As she's gotten more independent and developed more of her own routines and habits, she's also slept better and better on her own to the point now at 20 months old that she won't go to sleep if I'm there with her, even when sick, and actually wants to be in her bedroom alone. Interesting. She also brought up the issue of sex and co-sleeping. And she said, as a newborn, we kept her in a bassinet in our bedroom and regularly had sex with her in the room. Now that she's walking and learning to talk, though, the thought of having sex with her in the room is beyond creepy. Newborns are blissfully unaware of what is going on around them, so it's really not that weird to have them around in those intimate moments. A toddler, though, is super interested in what's going on and wants to understand all of it. That's not something I really want to explain to her yet. Thanks, Katie.
Sounds fair. So if you have an opinion on co-sleeping, pantyhose, or anything else under the sun, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is momstuff@howstuffworks.com. And while you're over there at howstuffworks.com, you can check out our blog, How To Stuff, where we write about how to do things. It's a pretty clever title. And you can check out articles on fashion, parenting, and all the rest of it at, you guessed it, howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Pedigree.
If you've been looking for love at first sight, it is closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at CedarPoint.com.